everyone. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to our newest podcast, Stryker Talks. Few companies in the medical device industry touch the entire spectrum of healthcare like Stryker. From accident scenes to ERs, from ORs to patient rooms, Stryker delivers the supplies, tools, and devices used to provide patients with the highest quality of care. In this podcast, we'll talk with the company's leaders to gain a better understanding of how innovation, new technologies, and teamwork will further Stryker's mission. Let's go.
Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi. Welcome back to the Stryker Talks podcast. Thrilled to bring you this conversation I had with Andy Pierce, who's Group President of MedSurg and Neurotechnology at Stryker. Andy was kind enough to join us at Device Talks West. This was the closing keynote conversation on day one, and it was talked about for that evening and the rest of the next day. So Andy made an impact not only with his words on stage, but I was really grateful. He stuck around for a very long time talking with folks after, and even walked the expo floor, which is always appreciated by conference folks. So it's a real pleasure to have Andy Pierce at Device Talks West. This took place on October 16th. And this is the conversation that we had, the keynote conversation again that we had on stage at the end of day one. So we hit most of the high points, some of the things we've talked about in previous podcasts, but there's something unique about sitting next to someone and having a conversation where you're actually face-to-face and not face-to-face over a Zoom call or a computer. So once again, thank you, Andy Pierce, for being a great part of Device Talks West. I included the entire conversation that Andy and I had. There was some great Q&A after that went on as well. But just for the sake of brevity, I cut it out. But also, it's a little reminder that you should be at our Device Talks meetings. The next one is coming up is Device Talks Boston on April 30th and May 1st. We'll be back in Minneapolis on June 11th, Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th, and we'll be back out west in Santa Clara on October 15th and 16th, same week as we've been doing the last 4 years, so or last 3 years. So that's it. Thanks so much again to Andy Pierce for joining us, and thanks for tuning into this episode of the Stryker Talks podcast. Before I begin this conversation, though, our managing editor, Kayleen Brown, sat down with our fantastic sponsor, Vantage Medical.
Greg Santorno, Chief Commercial Officer for Vantage Medical, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kayleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Greg, I want to start at the 40,000-foot level. Can you tell us about Vantage and its capabilities?
Absolutely. Yeah, so at Vantage Medical, we're a multi-site, North American-based contract manufacturer, and we've been partnering with medical technology OEMs for over 40 years. Our specialty is precision metals manufacturing, specifically complex machining, precision stamping, and full-scale assemblies. And we do this for markets like robotic-assisted surgery, for orthopedics, spine, trauma, and extremities, and minimally invasive surgery.
So clearly, Vantage has many capabilities. What would you say Vantage's area of expertise is?
Well, Kayleen, what really sets us apart is our deep expertise in metals machining. And this is for both small format precision machining and stamping, and for surgical instrument components and medium and large format precision machining for medical device capital equipment, or what we call systems. This includes highly automated sheet metal fabrication, finishing, paint, powder coat, and includes the electromechanical assembly of the entire system. We manage the entire process in-house from rapid prototyping all the way through to full-scale manufacturing.
That's unbelievable to me, especially knowing that just in June of this year, Vantage acquired Hobson & Motzer. How has that acquisition expanded your capabilities and expertise?
Oh, Kayleen, we're so excited about this acquisition. It's a phenomenal team. In our recent acquisition of Hobson & Motzer, they have over a century of precision metal manufacturing experience, which is now part of Vantage Medical, has further expanded our capabilities. Their highly automated facilities feature progressive die stamping, automated secondary machining and laser welding, PECM, precision electrochemical machining, in an in-house tool and die shop, and for producing some of the best medical device stampings in the world.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Greg. We'll hear more from Vantage Medical a little later on in the podcast. To learn more about how Vantage Medical works with medical device companies, please visit their website, vantagemedical.com. That's V-A-N-T-E-D-G-E medical.com.
Annie, very nice to have you here.
Thrilled to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Now, your offices are 20 minutes away, so you came along.
Easy breezy. Home game. I appreciate that. Thank
you. Always happy to come to you. So, yeah. As I mentioned, we've got our Striker Talks podcast. I've had the great opportunity to interview Andy at least three or four times for that. And I think we did one Device Talks Weekly as well. So
we did.
I know we'll be covering some familiar ground, including your path into medtech. But I'm guessing that there's probably one or two people here who don't listen to my podcast, which is disappointing. But it's reality. So how did you find your way into the medtech industry?
Serendipitously, for sure. So I'm originally from Michigan. I live here in the Bay Area now, but I was going to college back in Michigan, and like a lot of college seniors, was actually looking to be employed. So a paycheck was a good idea. At least my parents thought it would be a good idea to get a paycheck. And it just so happened that Stryker was one of the companies that came and recruited on campus. So I had never heard of Stryker. Stryker was a small company back then. I've been with the company since the beginning of 1996. So I just dated myself a little bit, but we were about $600 million in revenue at that point, 3,000 employees. So very much under the radar company. The more I learned about Stryker though, and understood both the history of the founding with Dr. Stryker, the purpose and mission that he drove, and the performance that our CEO at that time, John Brown, was driving in this little company in Kalamazoo, Michigan, the more I got excited about Stryker. And I did get very fortunate to actually get the opportunity to work at Stryker. I started my career in Kalamazoo in what today is one of our big giant divisions of the company called Stryker Instruments. Today it's about $5 billion in revenue. Back then it was $140 million in revenue. Hmm. So a lot of growth since then. I started in marketing. My career went from marketing to sales to general management starting in about 2008. And the rest, they say, Tom, is history.
Yeah.
But it's been a fabulous fit for me culturally from a performance orientation in the company. If you track Stryker at all, you see that we have relatively high performance in the space, and I like that. Who doesn't like to win? Who doesn't like to be with a company that wins? I think probably everybody here does. And I feel like we get the opportunity to do that at Stryker, and then this incredible purpose that's been laid into the company by Dr. Stryker that we get to live and help make healthcare better and raise the standard of patient care all over the world. It's a heck of a lot of fun to be part of.
Did you spent your entire career at the one company? If you need to get a drink of water, please go ahead. Were there ever thought? I'm sure there's always thoughts of what's going on over the fence. What kept you at Stryker? And
yeah,
how does one build a career at one company, a successful career in one company, and sort of yeah, remain engaged and incented and moving forward?
Well, being here in Silicon Valley, I always get kind of an alien look when I tell people that I've been with the company for 29 years, right? That's very unusual. They assume something's wrong with me. There might be something wrong with me, but it's probably not my commitment to my employer. A little bit of, I mentioned why I initially came to Stryker. I was attracted to the company. Company was high performance. But, you know, being frank, as I mentioned, it was really about the paycheck. And I came to Stryker for the paycheck, and I stayed for the purpose. I stayed for the incredible people that we have, the performance that we have. And it just doesn't get old. When you have such high expectations that we do from a growth perspective, and I would say it all starts with that, Tom, at Stryker, is mm-hmm. our growth expectation. So if you work backwards from there and you go, well, how are you organized as a company from an operating model perspective? What's your culture? Who do you recruit from a talent perspective? How do you invest trust in the business. It all starts from our high growth expectations. And with that, you get a 29-year career that has all sorts of dynamism to it. When you're growing, you have opportunity. I've had a lot of opportunity in my career. I'm not alone. A lot of people in our company have opportunities to do different things. So I've worked in multiple business units across the company. I've worked in multiple groups, have had the chance, you know, this West Michigan kid to travel all over the world and spend a lot of time internationally, work with amazing innovators and in companies outside of Stryker, and actually acquire a few of those companies along the way. Work with incredible thought leaders on the physician side of our business, and actually on the administrative side as well. So it's just been an incredible career. 29 years in, it feels just as exciting, just as motivating, just as inspiring as it did when I started. I know some people that are in companies for a long time, I hear this joke that they're resting, investing, you know, waiting for their stock options to vest. That is not me. That is not my peers. We're in it to win it, and we drive hard to live our mission, to be successful, and drive that great performance that you see out of Stryker. It's a heck of a lot of fun.
So Stryker, I think, is famous for that culture, for the growth culture, but also for the certain, I think, persona who's working there. Was that always in place? I didn't know if that was something that Kevin Lobo inherited or if he initiated, but where does that come from in how do you continue to feed that? Or is it just a habit that you have that you don't have to even feed it anymore, it just kind of exists?
Yeah, a little bit about our culture. I really appreciate the question, and I would be, I'd maybe get fired if I didn't say that Kevin hasn't made it a lot better. he has. He's been an amazing CEO. He took what was a very good company and has made it what I think is, I want to be humble here and not say great, but a much better company than when he took it over back in 2012. Before that, though, as I mentioned, the company was founded, and a good 40 years or so of leadership in the company by Dr. Stryker. And Dr. Stryker handed the reins in 1977 over to John Brown. Hmm. I mentioned John. John is kind of a legendary CEO in medtech circles. He was with Stryker from 77 until he formally retired as the chairman in 2009. So that's a pretty good run that John had.
Amazing.
And John inherited a company that structurally was a centralized company. And in 1980, a few years after he started, John decentralized the company and made Stryker into smaller operating units, which I think is an important part of our secret sauce. It keeps the company very entrepreneurial, and we have business leaders who feel like they get the opportunity every day to actually run and be accountable to growing their business. Mm-hmm. They also get to experience all the thrills of victory, and as the old saying goes, the agony of defeat, mm-hmm. which occasionally does happen when things aren't going so well. But you are a business owner when you run a business inside Stryker. We're not driving from up on high every decision that's made inside of those business units. They get to do that themselves. The other thing, kind of neat thing that John did, I talked about this growth culture inside the company, really everything working backwards from our high expectations. When John was looking to take Stryker public, this is 1979, he was working with the investment bankers to take Stryker public, and investment banker asked John, "Hey, John, what do you, and when we're doing our roadshow here, what do you want the message to be about Stryker?" And John said, "Well, I want us to be positioned as a growth company." And the banker said, "Well, do you know what that means?" And John said, "Well, not really, but tell me." And he said, "Growth companies drive 20% growth every year. And if you know anything about Stryker and John's history, from that point forward, Stryker's mission was 20% growth every single year. And we did that under John's leadership for a good 20, 25 years. Obviously, the company got bigger, the markets changed, mm-hmm. but that cultural element inside the company, high expectations, entrepreneurial spirit, you get to run your own business, talent. We started working very closely with Gallup, not for polling, but for talent. Mm-hmm. In 1989, we have a strong culture around Gallup. That's talent selection, talent development. That started in 89. employee engagement surveys. A lot of you might know Q12. We've done Q12 when it was called the Max Survey before Gallup actually purchased the company. And you know, since about the mid-90s, it's called Q12, and that's our employee engagement survey that we take very seriously every single year. Now with our 55,000 employees that we have feedback sessions for every one of those employees to be able to share their thoughts on the survey, on what they wrote for verbatims, how they scored it. So we listen to our people. It is a very bottom-up culture. Kevin took that, he made it better. I would say our weakness before Kevin became CEO is we had decentralized businesses. At that time, I would say we were fiercely decentralized, very independent running businesses. And in fact, so much so that those businesses internally, they actually competed against each other. And that competition amongst business units was fostered. And Kevin came in and said, okay, we're actually going to measure ourselves against our competitors, not against our own internal competitors, so the ones on the outside. And Kevin really changed that and has built what I think today is a very collaborative culture that we have inside of the company. And we have some commonality across our businesses, some shared services. Of course, we do that as you scale for a variety of reasons. But more than anything, I think our business leaders get along a lot better today. They work closer. We have common technology platforms that we build together across those businesses. And certainly as we go to market and we work with those big, sophisticated administrative purchasing customers, we can show up as one Stryker. And just as a side note, when I started in the company in 1996, we had four business units, and today Stryker is 22 business units, both, as I mentioned, operating independently and accountable for their results respectively.
That's interesting. So let's talk about your current structure. It was a couple of years ago now where Stryker was organized into the entity that you lead, the MedSurg Neurotech entity in orthopedics and spine. The divisions seem very evident as to why they're in place, but what sort of led to that, the need to create those two larger silos for those companies to exist within?
I mean, believe it or not, Tom, you know, being 22 separate operating businesses and only having two groups is it's actually a very, very simple operating structure. Hmm. So if you walked into Kevin's boardroom and what we call our SLT or Stryker leadership team, there's only maybe six or seven people in there, including him. So it's a very lean at the top operating group, and we have these two functioning operational teams. My counterpart, Spencer Stiles, runs our orthopedics and spine business. That's primarily orthopedic implants. If you just kind of think about that, that's where our Mako robotics sits as well, which some of you might be familiar with that technology. And then in my world, we have really what amounts to all of the other products in the company: power tools, surgical visualization, our beds and stretcher business, our defibrillators, our neurotechnology devices, including all of our stroke care products. That all exists under me. 8 of our business units under Spencer, 14 under me, and it actually operates pretty lean, pretty fast, and we have relatively quick access to Kevin to get things done when we need to get things done with the CEO. But because there's only two of us sitting at his table with the large operating groups, Spencer and myself, he and I can get on the same page really quickly as well, whether it's talent decisions, structure, M&A decisions, we can make those really quickly together. And it's a good thing that we get along. We've known each other for a long time and we're good friends, but I think we're also productive colleagues together.
So what is your relationship then with the leaders of those 14 entities? And do you feel like the business owner of that group, or do you feel more like someone overseeing 14 individual businesses?
Yeah, I absolutely feel like a business owner. It's about a $13 billion business owner. So
not too bad, yeah.
It scares me a little bit sometimes, but and I have about 16,000 people that are operating in my world. But I get close to all of them. You know, one of the calling cards of Stryker is that it's a very high touch culture internally. So an extraordinary amount of travel as we go out and visit our businesses. As I mentioned, they're decentralized, so that means not just decentralized in theory or practice, but also geographically. So they're spread out all over this country and a few all over the world. So we spend a lot of time in our businesses. If we do a business review inside of my 14 businesses that I'm responsible for, I don't have an office that they come to and come see me. I go to them and I bring one or two other people with me on my staff, head of HR, head of finance. We go to them and we do the business reviews on their turf. In fact, I'll share with you just a quick anecdote. This might sound a little odd, but knowing that we're 55,000 employees, we're $22 billion in revenue and growing, we actually don't have a corporate office. We used to have a corporate office, and we closed it down a few years ago. And anybody that was in corporate functions, primarily in accounting, tax, part of accounting, in legal, some regulatory, Kevin, where he sat in his office, our CFO, we asked them all to integrate themselves into our businesses. So they sit inside of the buildings that are really led by our operating leaders, our division presidents. So it's kind of an interesting thing, but it's been very energizing for people that used to go to a corporate office and show up at work every day with fellow tax accountants and attorneys, and now they're surrounded all day by customers who are visiting, innovators who are creating amazing new technologies, our M&A teams who are looking at buying those new technologies. So it's been pretty inspiring for them as well.
Yeah, I could see that being just... the removal of that structure, of that organization, of that sort of identity, and the walls around it just being really freeing, and you're right, incorporating them in the day-to-day business. So is there a decidedly different feel between now and before that move? Does it?
I don't know, Tom, that there's a different feel. I do feel like whether you're in a corporate function, which, by the way, is a very small group of people. I mean, most of the action inside the company happens in our operating businesses. Mm-hmm. But our support from those functions has always been very good. As my boss likes to say, our divisions are the center of gravity at Stryker. So that aligns our enabling resources or support resources towards our businesses. But being in the businesses certainly helps. It changes perspective, and it has helped really drive that even further, that we are here, which, by the way, I'm one of those, to help our businesses be successful and grow and win in the marketplace.
That's great. So let's talk a bit about the news of late. I mean, Stryker's been very active in M&A. I don't have the exact numbers on the number of deals, but there's a lot of them, and a lot of money has changed hands. How does this sort of spate or streak of acquisitions, is this just how things work? Like you acquire a bunch of things, you digest them, and then you go acquire more things a few years later? Or is this sort of the result of external factors, that there's just more companies that are in a position to buy right now, the deals are right, the interest rates are what they are, or whatever needs to happen to make these deals done? Is it an internal thing that's led to sort of this rush of deals, or is it an external thing that's led to this rush of deals?
Yeah, great question. I would say externally, there's a couple of variables and times that I can remember, obviously, and 2008, 2009, buying companies was a little tricky. We didn't do that then. And then the first year or two of the pandemic, our priorities, along with many others, were a lot different then. But venture does shift as well in terms of venture investment in healthcare. And we have seen that evolve over time. And there are periods of time where investment is much more robust. And several years later, we'll see some of the fruits of that labor and have more companies to choose from. And sometimes that slows down. And there is a little bit of that as well that happens. But generally speaking, we are active in assessing opportunities. Those business units that I mentioned have dedicated, each one of them has a dedicated M&A team. So there is no corporate M&A team that, there's a small, very small team, a leader and a couple of people that support our M&A teams, But the action, again, back to where the business actually happens inside the company, is inside of those business units. And those M&A teams every day are working with targets, working with marketing teams, working with our sales organizations and customers to best understand their spaces and the opportunities that we have. And at any given point in time, we are across the company assessing dozens of companies actively. Our structure allows us to do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you noted, some of those companies eventually bubble up. And I think we've been in the ballpark of a little over 60 companies that we've acquired over the last decade. So pretty active. I would also give Kevin a lot of credit back to some of the things that have changed under Kevin. John was a little more conservative on the M&A front, mm-hmm. and Kevin has been a little more aggressive on the M&A front, and that's been a lot of fun.
We'll take a quick break from our interview with Andy Pierce, Stryker's Group President of MedSurg and Neurotechnology, to bring back our sponsor, Vantage Medical, Greg Santorno, Chief Commercial Officer of Vantage Medical. So, Greg, I want to get a little more specific now. How does Vantage Medical leverage its expertise in precision machining and rapid prototyping to address the unique demands of trauma and extremities, particularly with complex geometries in implants and fixation systems?
You know, what sets us apart is our ability to combine precision machining expertise, our fully integrated secondary operations, with all the advantages of being a North American manufacturer. Our in-house capabilities, such as thread whirling, type 3 tie anodizing, or otherwise known as hard coat, grinding, bead blasting, passivation, laser welding, laser marking, and that's just to name a few, allow us to expertly produce complex components like bone screws and components for fixation systems. Now, along with our rapid prototyping offering, these capabilities ensure we're meeting the most demanding specifications. And Kayleen, did you know our ISO 13485 certified facilities, our FDA registration, along with our focus on operational excellence, ensure of a high standard of quality throughout the entire process and helps us deliver products to our customers faster and with higher reliability.
What about surgical robotics? How does Vantage Medical leverage its expertise in precision machining and complex assemblies to meet the unique demands of surgical robotics?
In surgical robotics, precision is key, and that's where Vantage Medical shines. We specialize in producing high-precision components and assemblies where absolute accuracy is critical. Our expertise spans instrument device components, robotic structures, and electromechanical assemblies, consistently meeting the rigorous demands of this market. So what differentiates us is our ability to support both the development of robotics instruments and systems and produce at scale. And Kayleen, you may not know, we have over 20 years of experience supporting the surgical robotics industry. We've been doing this at scale from the very beginning, and we're proud to be recognized as the first and foremost contract manufacturer in this space.
Thanks so much, Greg. We will hear more from Vantage Medical a little later on in the podcast, but for now, please make sure to visit Vantage Medical's website. That is www.vantagemedical.com, VantageMedical.com. Now back to our interview with Andy Pierce.
I want to walk through the deals you've done recently, but I want to first sort of just understand a little more about the M&A process. I've always been, Kevin told the story of when he went to buy Mako and he flew to Florida and had dinner with Maurice Ferrier and basically said, I'll bet my career in this deal, I won't bet the company in this deal, and they came to terms, and it just sounded very cinematic, and I just imagined this piece of paper being slid across the table with a number on it. Probably not the case, but I just had that in my head. I'm guessing that most M&As don't happen that way. Yeah. There's not that sort of instant moment of we're moving in this direction. It's a little more methodical, and we had a conversation prior to getting up on stage about that. What is, and you got into a little bit, but a little more detail, what is the process of, what is the M&A process for Stryker? How long are you following companies? Are you following two or three companies that have similar goals because you're interested in a space? Or do you take interest in a specific company and you really follow that company? What is that like?
Well, occasionally there is a company that's one of one.
Yeah.
And we will buy those companies too, assuming that the innovation is there, the runway for future growth is there, the impact on patients and customers is there. So there are some one-of-ones out there for sure. But by and large, as mentioned, our M&A teams, along with typically our marketing team, sometimes bringing along R&D leadership into those conversations as well, are building longer-term relationships with potential targets on the M&A front. So there's virtually nothing that you'll see, and I would say 90%+ of the time, that you'll see Stryker do where we haven't had a relationship with management for typically years when we actually go to acquire something. So out of the blue, where did this come from? The piece of paper and all of that.
Andy Pierce just pulled up out front. Hold on, what's going on?
Like, that is extremely rare. And again, it goes back to our decentralized operating model. It's very entrepreneurial. Each business is responsible for maintaining their roster of potential deals that they can do and working closely with management in those companies over time. I was mentioning we just acquired, I think we've acquired in my world maybe five companies in the last 4 months. And two of those we've had relationships with and we've been working closely with for over a decade. And we're looking for milestones. We very rarely buy companies that are pre-market. Mm-hmm. Usually we want to see some commercial traction in those businesses. So we look for milestones in that. And then we're more than willing to pay a little bit more to have a de-risked technology or company that we acquire. And you know, a lot of our deals you can see are public, and we, I think, are known as a disciplined but fair buyer in the marketplace. But we spend a lot of time. I'll personally get involved, my counterpart Spencer will get involved with many of these deals and building relationships with management over time. We think that being able to look across the table and when it actually comes down to having a negotiation, that a relationship matters. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of work to make sure that we have the right partner, they have the right partner in us, that we have the trust. It doesn't mean we don't get into fierce negotiations. Of course, we almost always do, but we typically have a very high comfort level with one another before that happens.
How do you balance external versus internal innovation?
Well, I would say we're an equal opportunity innovator. When you have the growth aspirations that we do and that we've realized over time, you have to be open-minded to innovation that comes from organic internal innovation, which we have robust investments, you know, upwards of 7% of sales every year in internal innovation. And then, you know, as we talked about in external, and our R&D professionals, you know, there are some in this room, so the sentiment that you will occasionally get, and not to say we're immune to this in Stryker, is a little bit of not invented here syndrome. We can do that better, we can do that faster. And we do a very intentional job of bringing along our R&D teams as well as to why we may actually pursue something outside the company, why that might be a better use of time or investment to go ahead and do that. But if you look at our growth trajectory, and we track this very closely, the percentage of revenue that comes from newer technologies that we bring to market that are Stryker inventions or that we've acquired, the growth that we drive year over year is about 50-50 between companies that have been brought into the company and their technologies and our own organic innovations that we bring to market.
Will you have parallel something going on internally in a company you're minding externally, pursuing the same goal and kind of see who wins, or do you say we already have an internal project for that, we're not going to look external for that?
It happens. Absolutely happens. We have as mentioned, we have a number of our deals, and you know, you can look at all these if you choose to, that are just tuck-in deals. They fit technology spaces where we already compete. They're complementary, of course. And with that, usually comes some domain expertise that we already have, and oftentimes internal programs that typically are maturing that we may make the decision that, look, you know, we've done a very good job, but we're not fully de-risked. This company is de-risked. They have an incredible technology. They're making traction in the marketplace, and we're going to shut this down, reassign that team to some new innovation that they can work on and bring to market, and we're going to acquire over here. So it does happen. I actually mentioned to Tom before, as he was using the example of Kevin sliding the piece of paper across the table, when we acquired Mako 10 or 11 years ago, we had a program inside the company for hard tissue robotics or orthopedic robotics that was about a decade old at that time. We were investing very substantially every year. We had 100, 120 engineers for a long period of time, and Mako was A, de-risked, traction in the marketplace, had a great brand position, and was trading a little bit at a discount at that point. So we decided that it was the right thing for us to do to pursue Mako. And we actually shut down that program by and large, but there were some really neat innovations that we brought in future iterations of Mako from that team and a number of our engineers that were working on what we called Project Moonracer at that time, working on that project that became engineers that still today work inside of our Mako business.
Interesting. That's really fascinating. So I want to talk about the deals that you have done, but before we do that, let's talk about the deal that you haven't done yet that I'm sure everyone in there is out there is wondering about, soft tissue robotics. I mean, we've had the Da Vinci 5 come out, hear about their tower and how it's a threat to you folks and how you need to move into this space. And obviously, I'm not expecting any sort of revelation here today, but how are you hearing all this and how are you responding to it? And how are you engaging? Are you engaging, I suppose, some of these soft tissue robotic companies out there, some of them maybe that we've had here today, and kicking the tires and making those phone calls and meeting with, how are you approaching the soft tissue space?
Sure, sure. Yeah, well, as I mentioned, there, the businesses that are responsible for these spaces, they spend a lot of time developing these relationships, getting to know the space, getting to know where the differentiation is or could be in each of these technologies. And I did see on your agenda that you had a couple of companies speaking today. I think if you talk to management, which may be in the room, they would say, yeah, Stryker shows up and asks a lot of questions and comes and visits and all those things that I just mentioned, along with probably, you know, 10 or 15 other more mature companies in soft tissue robotics that we get very close to. Globally, that we're very close to. And by the way, there are a lot more startups in soft tissue robotics than that. And tangentially, we do pay attention to kind of everything that's going on in that space. Now, that being said, we have an incredible amount of respect for the market leader. And we are cheering them on. They're, as I mentioned, you know, our ambition to make healthcare better. They are making healthcare better. It is great technology. It's the right side of healthcare, and we're very excited about what they do and what they continue to do to innovate in the space. Competition is a good thing. We know that. One day you may see Stryker competing in that world, but I'll tell you, we will not do that in a an unthoughtful sort of way, an undisciplined way. As I mentioned before, we have a couple of companies that we just acquired where we have a decade plus relationship. That sounds torturous for people that are working with us, but you know, ultimately it ends well for them and for us. And I'll say we are taking extraordinary care as we continue to learn more about soft tissue robotics. I would argue that there's probably no company that's better connected across the ecosystem of innovators in soft tissue robotics outside of course the few large companies that are doing that than we are. We have a dedicated team that spends a lot of time traveling the globe with KOLs, you know, sitting in consoles and driving these robots. It's a lot of fun, but it is not for the faint of heart. The market leader is very good, and we're very respectful of them.
We're going to take our last break from our interview with Andy Pierce, Stryker's Group President of MedSurg and Neurotechnology, to bring back our sponsor, Vantage Medical, and Greg Centurno, the Chief Commercial Officer of Vantage. So lastly, Greg, I've heard about your First Step design for manufacturing platform. How does First Step benefit OEMs specifically for precision metal components?
Oh, Kaylin, I am so excited to talk to you about First Step. This is a program we've had in play for a while at Vantage, and now we're rolling it out across the platform. So First Step is a program designed to help OEMs rapidly develop, prototype, and refine precision metal components to be integrated into their device assemblies while optimizing the manufacturing process along the way. Our hands-on collaborative approach allows us to work as an extension of the development team, ensuring that component design and manufacturing processes evolve together, saving time and resources.
So if I'm an OEM, how does the first step engagement feel to me?
Kaylin, we get that question all the time. With a first step engagement, our OEM customers receive ongoing design for manufacturability input, design for quality input, and design for cost input, along with high precision prototypes that enable early testing for form, fit, and function, which accelerates the development cycle and it streamlines the transition to full-scale production. So by maintaining the same standard of excellence from prototype to production, we ensure of the highest levels of quality throughout. And as mentioned before, our strategic North American locations, situated in key medical device hubs, further reduce lead times, mitigate risks, and allow products to reach the market faster. Kaylin, first step, it helps our customers accelerate innovation for the people who matter most, their patients and caregivers.
Greg Santorno, Chief Commercial Officer for Vantage Medical, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you, Kaylin. It's been a pleasure to be here.
A huge, huge thanks to Vantage Medical for sponsoring this episode of Stryker Talks. Once again, if you want to learn more about how Vantage Medical works with medical device companies, please visit their website, www.vantagemedical.com, VANTEDGE medical.com.
A lot of the conversations around surgical robotics, soft tissue surgical robotics, seems defensive, like you need to do this to prevent this from happening. And that seems inconsistent with a growth mindset that you folks have. Is it, when you're looking at these deals, do you ever take defense into consideration, or is it more always offense?
I think if you look at our history, Tom, of acquisitions, even big ones, if you look at Vocera right here in the Bay Area that we acquired just a few years ago, our Wright Medical acquisition, which was another big one for us. We've bought a couple of kind of big, what would be considered to be unusual businesses. If you're an investor, why did you just go buy this defibrillator business that used to be run by Medtronic? Didn't grow at all. That was Physio-Control. It's now a double-digit grower for us consistently every year for AEDs and defibrillators, along with a suite of products around EMS, EMT. Those technologies, and we bought a company called Sage, which is for infection prevention primarily. There's also injury prevention in that portfolio, which is now an $800-900 million business for us. And that was a head scratcher for a lot of people. It's a great grower, a strong double-digit grower for Stryker for many years now. Those are offensive moves. And if you look across our portfolio, we will bolster our existing offering. That absolutely happens. These are the tuck-ins that I'm talking about. We bought a company called Novadaq that made us stronger in surgical visualization with fluorescence imaging. We had a fluorescence imaging platform. They had what we thought, purely from a technology perspective, specifically in fluorescence, a better offering. We acquired them. We learned a lot from them. But that was an offensive move. We were leading in the market already, and we had the opportunity to buy them. That was a public company. Some of you might be familiar with that. It is exceedingly rare, and you can go across our company and look at these 60 plus deals over the last 10 years where we have made a move from a defensive posture. We really don't think that way. We are very diversified as a company. We can take some competitive encroachment or a slowing of a market in one space because of our diversification, because of our model. So it's pretty rare that we fight off the back foot, and it's much more common where we're fighting off the front foot in an offensive posture.
Interesting. Let's talk about the deals that you have done, including Vocera and the connected care space. You had Vocera and more recently Care.ai. Talk first about Vocera and how it fit into your portfolio, because it was one of those deals you're like, what? I don't understand. Like, they make hospital beds and they're buying this communication company.
Yeah.
What were the dots that you connected to make that acquisition, and how has it fit into Stryker's portfolio?
Well, you know, first and foremost, any reasonably good company works from the customer backwards. Mm. And what are the customer needs? What are we seeing in terms of their challenges inside of the facility? And one of the kind of great businesses that we have inside of the company is a beds and stretcher business that works in the med-surg floor. So if you're sick or you're post-surgery and you're recovering for a day or two, you might be laying in a Stryker bed or maybe in the ICU. And certainly as you come into the ED, if you happen to get, unfortunately, picked up in an ambulance and brought to the emergency department. So we're very close with the strains and challenges of the caregivers that work inside of those respective departments. And we had been watching now, as I mentioned, over many years, some of these newer technologies that helped with patient care coordination. So one thing that you might be well aware of is over time, and certainly post-pandemic, the strain on nursing has only grown. So fewer nurses taking care of more patients, that's a very stressful environment. So the more you can unburden them from the stress of the job, including alarm fatigue, that's something that you hear a lot about where you're in a patient room, they're hooked up to multiple monitoring devices and there's alarms going off all over the place, mm-hmm. and the nursing staff isn't quite sure or tunes it out, frankly, on where to go, who to actually go to first from a prioritization perspective when they're under a lot of stress. So Vocera, which we had been watching over some period of time, is a patient care coordination platform, which allows for communication from caregiver to caregiver, whether it's via a smartphone or a smart badge. They actually have, which unfortunately is a reality in healthcare, a panic button when there's an emergency or caregiver's safety is in jeopardy. They can push a panic button. And the kind of really neat thing about Vocera is you have all these technologies, those devices that are monitoring patients or our bed, for example, that the patient's laying in. There's a lot of different types of things electronically or digitally that are happening around that bed. And Vocera technology is connected to those devices. And where I was going on the neat thing, which goes back to the panic button and safety, is we have a rules engine. It's called Engage. It's, you know, of course, invented by Vocera, not us. And that rules engine allows for the establishment of right message to right person or right team at the right time. So, for example, if you have a safety team, a threat team inside the hospital, and that button is pushed, it goes to the exact right people to notify them. We're in room 211. We need our safety team. We need you here, stat, right? Because that's you're pushing that button. And there are a number of different, we have roughly 150 partners that we work through that run their monitors, their various technologies through the Vocera platform so we can burden the staff from alarm fatigue. So you're only getting the right alarm with the right person, you know, right where to go at the right time. And if you're not available, it overrides you and moves down that that care team tree to make sure that it finally gets to somebody who accepts the call and they actually go and see that patient. So that's where Vocera, we saw the need. Mm-hmm. It's a continued need today. Nurses are under a lot of pressure and stress, and providing that really high level of patient caregiving, which they want to do, and a lower stress environment, which they also want, is something that we are lucky to have the opportunity to do with Vocera.
That's great. And Care.ai,
quick. Similar, right?
Yeah.
Care.ai is, and again, some may be familiar in the room with Care.ai. Think about Care.ai primarily as virtual nursing. So input, discharge, activities that might be kind of lower on the value chain for a nurse that's live to provide care for a patient. Again, they're stretched. There are fewer of them. Nurses are burning out, and Care.ai actually has a technology, I mentioned it, virtual nursing, where you have a monitor in the room, and they can actually help virtually, or you have a data bank where you have nurses that are off-site watching patients inside their room through cameras and communicating with patients on things like the examples I gave of discharge or when they're actually being brought into the patient room. So it takes the burden off of the live nurse that's there and allows them to do higher value added tasks. And it's a really neat technology that plays in to the nursing shortage trend that we unfortunately are experiencing today.
Interesting. So Chris, if you wouldn't mind grabbing a mic, we'll take audience questions in a few minutes. I want to just ask a few more questions, but if anyone, Chris, if you just want to keep your eye open for someone raising their hands, we can bring in a few questions from the audience. That clock is clearly broken. It's going by way too fast. I think
you can stop me whenever.
No, this is great. I feel bad. I'm like, I keep seeing you reach for the bottle of water, and I'm like, one more question. Neurovascular. You had the Ceres acquisition. What? It's a big space for you, obviously. What opportunities do you see there? There are robotics companies in neurovascular. But anyway, we won't have to go back to the robotics question. But where does the growth come from there, or where do you see growth there?
Well, first off, on robotics, I'll hit that. There are robotics companies in the stroke space.
Yeah.
So that is a thing,
yeah,
for sure, and that's an area where we pay close attention to as well. This is around value and how you actually bring something to market that actually truly makes healthcare better. And that's probably a matter of time, mm-hmm, where you'll have some innovations in that space that are robotic innovations. A lot of what's happening in robotics and neurovascular as well is remote care, mm-hmm, believe it or not. You know, you think about a stroke that might be in the bush in Australia, and you have all of your population centers in Sydney or Brisbane or wherever it might be, and you can actually, in theory, provide care where you actually don't have a stroke physician on site in, you know, wherever it might be 1,500 miles away. So a lot of the thinking is around that. That's pretty cool,
yeah,
space age, and we'll see where that all goes. But overall, in stroke, there are innovations every single day in stroke care, which I think we should all be grateful for. Hopefully, you know, you never have to experience that as a patient yourself, but certainly many of you have as a loved one, and your likelihood of survival today in stroke is exponentially higher than it was just a decade ago. So those types of technologies, we're constantly, again, sourcing the scouring the world for opportunities. You mentioned Cirrus. This is a technology that makes addressing a non-ruptured aneurysm more efficient, easier, faster. You can have faster procedural time. That's always a good thing, and simpler for the physician to care for. That's called a one-and-done technology. If you think about stroke care today, if you know anything about it, traditionally we have little tiny, very small platinum coils that are implanted inside of these, call it packing them, inside of an aneurysm that looks like a little punching bag. And what that does is it seals off essentially the blood flow from moving into that aneurysm and allows blood to flow along that vessel naturally. So it takes the pressure off the aneurysm. So, you know, knock on wood, it never bursts. And we don't want that, of course. The one and done technologies or intrasaccular devices like the Cirrus technology that we acquired is not this kind of tedious packing of coils, but it's a single device, almost looks like a tulip or an umbrella that goes in the neck of the aneurysm and blocks off that blood flow and allows the procedure to move much simpler, but it's also just a lot more time efficient for care.
Interesting. Final question for me. Back pain, you had the Virtus acquisition. I initially, when I first saw that, I thought it was neuromodulation and realized it wasn't. And then I read an analyst report saying, well, you know, this could be a step into neuromodulation. So where does Stryker look at? Talk about Virtus. What do you see of the opportunities in back pain? And neuromodulation is another one of those areas that people are kind of watching you and hoping you'll maybe move into.
Well, there certainly are a few spaces where we're not shy about looking into, and mm-hmm, we have talked about a few of those. One, of course, we just talked about soft tissue robotics, and another one of those is neuromodulation or using electric stim. And you likely know there are a number of different clinical applications for that. One of those is back pain, but there are many others. And this is a space that we're interested. We've invested a lot of time over the years in building some expertise inside the company. We actually have had periods of time, we currently do not, but we've had our own development teams working on some of these things. But we have a lot of that knowledge that sits inside the company, and we do get to know these companies fairly well. Many of these technologies are helping in big ways patients today, and you know, you'll even occasionally see a commercial or two on TV that's a neuromodulation related commercial for a company that works in the sleep apnea space. But we do investigate these technologies. It is interesting, but we have an existing pain business today that works inside, it's again, one of our business units inside of our instruments division called Interventional Spine, which is where Vertos is moving inside the company. And that is primarily around lower back pain, minimally invasive types of applications, ablation, things like that, nerve ablation. And in this case, you have spinal stenosis where Vertos is addressing that, where you have pressure on nerves or in the spinal column. And their technology, a very simple technology, minimally invasive, allows you to go in and shave away some of the ligament that has overgrown and has put that pressure on the nerves and hopefully get that patient back to some degree of health quickly. So. Okay. Yeah, we have a space that would be the area where neuromodulation would likely fall in the company should we ever decide to pursue one of these, what we think are very promising technologies, some actually very mature, but some promising technologies in neuromodulations, that's where.
Great point. All right, wonderful. Well, you've been very generous with your time and your thoughts, and it's been a real pleasure to see you in person and to have this conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Great. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks again to Andy Pierce for joining us at Device Talks West. Thanks, of course, to Vantage Medical for sponsoring this episode of the Stryker Talks podcast. I appreciate all of you, of course, our wonderful listeners. Thanks for being part of the Stryker Talks podcast experience. And I hope you're indulging in our other podcasts. You can subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network so you don't miss a single one. You can also find all the podcasts on our website, devicetalks.com. And while you're there, you can register for our in-person meetings where we'll have great conversations like the one I just had and just shared with Andy Pierce. We'll have that in Boston on April 30th and May 1st, in Minneapolis on June 11th, and back in Santa Clara on October 15th and 16th. Please do connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect also with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Of course, connect with Vantage Medical. It's always a help. And we'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. That's it, folks. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Stryker Talks podcast. And thanks to everyone who was part of Device Talks West. It was great to see so many people in person. And we look forward to getting back to it next year.